with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long-time contributor to the station, and a beloved figure by us and all. And he joins us on the Score Hotline. Biggs A!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you got the story. It's all about the connection between the great Brett Rypien and the soon-to-be Hall of Famer, Colin Johnson. What a combination. What a glorious night. The rain ended it early. Otherwise, who knows what would have
Are you
happened.
Safe, Brad? We need to know. Are you safe?
Yeah, I made it back. I did the walk through the rain. I found a spare garbage bag to put my
computer in.
Backpack in. Yeah. And got the shuttle bus to the satellite parking lot. Drove back to Cleveland. So everything's in great shape this morning. And as usual, looks like United's going to be on time in the friendly skies.
Well, we'll get you out on time to this morning. But first, was there anything to take away from what the Bears accomplished on the field before they canceled the game because of the weather?
I think you got an opportunity for guys at the bottom of the roster to, you know, start building a case for decisions that have to take place at the end of the month. The Bears held 35 players out of the game. The Texans held 36 players out of the game. So you're talking about starters, and then key backup players did not play. You know, the Bears had their long snapper Patrick Scales on extra points only. Their punter Torrey Taylor was only holding on those kick attempts. He wasn't punting. So you can't draw too many big conclusions. You'd be making a mistake if you're trying to say, you know, this guy's got an early edge here because they held so many guys out. And that's where it's going to become critical for these players like Colin Johnson and look at Carl Jones, the undrafted rookie free agent linebacker from UCLA who had a game high 7 tackles. The reps that they got, they're not going to get as many when they play a week from tomorrow in Buffalo. They're not going to get as many the week after that when they host the Bengals at Soldier Field. So it's going to make practice reps paramount for these guys, again, as they try to build a resume to force the team to make a difficult decision.
Brad, David's been laughing at my obsession with the depth chart and the way that I was looking at the flip card. I can't help but notice that not only is Ryan Bace or Coleman Shelton going to be the center, and Coleman Shelton, by the way, was on the field in his pads with number 18 taking some snaps from him before the game started, so I don't know what that means. I'm reading into everything. But it says here on this goofy little flip card, Tyson Bagent or Brett Rypien. Is there a legit battle going there? And it also says Khalil Herbert or Rashawn Johnson. They used Johnson first. Are we looking at this? Is this all nonsense? Or are there secret camp battles that we haven't talked about going on?
I don't know if there's secret camp battles going on. It could a competition, and they've been competing since the spring. Like, it's not like you get to camp or preseason game one and the competition starts. They've been competing since they got on the field in OTAs, right? The evaluation process stretches back to May. Could something begin to ramp up at that number two quarterback position? Sure. Was it evident last night? No, not when Bagent goes out, gets one series, 3 pass attempts, and then Rypien is afforded 4 series, 3 of them which lead to touchdowns. That's not a competition when Bagent's really not allowed to do anything beyond that first drive, right? And that first drive stalled out with a false start on a 4th and short, which then led to a punt in Houston territory. So does rip in strong performance against guys that are going to be a bunch of them hard pressed to get anything beyond a practice squad spot with the Texans, something that catches their attention and makes them look a little more closely at this. I think it's possible, but let's not make Brett Rippon into some guy that's going to transform the quarterback room as the number two guy for the Bears yet. He's got a 2-2 career record as a starter, just like Tyson Bagent does. Tyson Bagent, you're probably a little more unclear of the ceiling because he's a younger guy with less experience going into year two. Rippon is older. Rippon's going to be, 28 when the season begins. He had a start for the Rams last year up at Lambeau Field, threw for about 120 yards or so in a 20-3 loss to Green Bay.
So, Brad, obviously you don't want to have this conversation, but the Bears coaches have to, especially when you look at what's going on with the Chargers and Justin Herbert being out with plantar fasciitis for a couple weeks, and what's going on in Seattle with Geno Smith. The injury bug could bite at any time. You have to be prepared. How comfortable do you think the Bears are with their backup quarterback situation that you just referenced, with Tyson Bagent being their number two?
Well, I don't think you're not super comfortable with it. You don't have some of the guys that the Bears have had in that number two role over the years. There's no Brian Griese there, right? There's no Kyle Orton. There's no Jason Campbell. There's no Josh McCown. There's no, Chase Daniel made an obscene amount of money as a guy who held a clipboard and had an earpiece and a ball cap on the sideline. You don't have that guy, but again, that's why I referenced you're trying to determine and evaluate what the ceiling can be for Bagent, who came from D2 last year, who was strong in camp last year to earn a job on the roster and became that number two. So you're looking for that growth from him. I've always said with undrafted rookie free agents that make it, that's great for them to really begin putting down roots in the National Football League. They've got to make that leap forward in year two because the team's investment in them is so minimal. So if the team doesn't see the trajectory and the arrow up with the guy in year two, it's a lot easier to cut bait with a guy like that than it is a draft pick that you've got, that draft capital in, that money in, that you've got some of your reputation based on your draft picks. Those guys have more room for growth and development generally.
I know this is just kind of a goofy operation question, but we wondered whether Shane Waldron would be on the field or in the press box, and he was on the field, but yes, it didn't look like there was a press box where he could go. I mean,
they had coaches up in the box. They were,
but they were on our coaches. Side. Usually they're behind. I mean, I'm just saying it didn't look like, there was no kind of stands behind that you would think you would go to.
Yeah, I mean, if he was a press box guy, I think we probably would have seen him up there. They were milling around during the outside their booth during the delay that lasted a little bit longer than it probably should have last night. The first Hall of Fame game that was prematurely banged since the I think it was Packers Chiefs in 2003, guys. That was a storm shortened Hall of Fame game in Canton. Prior to that, it happened Packers-Chargers back in 1980. So the third time this game's been shortened by weather, but we'll maybe get a better indication on that in Buffalo next week.
So, Brad, is there any reason to believe Caleb Williams won't play in the next preseason game?
Is
Is there like a reasonable expectation to see him?
I think it's reasonable to expect Caleb and the majority of the starters to get some action against the Buffalo Bills. I'm sure they won't say how much. It'll be dependent to a degree probably on how practice goes. They will be back at it Saturday and Sunday at House Hall, off Monday, and then they have practices Tuesday through Thursday before they travel to Buffalo for what's I think it's a noon kickoff against the Bills.
Yeah, and that's a week from Saturday, is that right? So
From Saturday. So they've got a long runway to this next time they'll be out there, and that's why again I referenced, you know, the practice reps that are going to be coming up for these guys that, you know, maybe some of them took a step forward. Some of them were perhaps a little more nondescript. They've got to maximize their opportunities. And again, I'll stress one more time, the evaluation process didn't start July 19th when they rolled into camp and had their first meeting. It started way back in May. This is a process, and it's always evolving.
Thanks, Brad. Great stuff. Enjoy the trip home. Hope you're well, buddy.
Safe travels, Brad.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs, from the Chicago Tribune, and we are delighted to welcome in Misty McMichael, the wife of Steve McMichael, the Chicago Bear that's going in. Misty, this story is heart-wrenching. What you guys are going through, what Steve is going through, and to have this moment, I heard you say that you feel like it's bought you more time with him. That's just a beautiful
sentence. It has, because, you know, we had a DNR before this this year's class induction, and I knew that when they were down from 100 to 12, I knew that we were going to get in. And that's when we ripped up the do not resuscitate and told him, babe, you're going to have to stick it in, you know, stick it out and see yourself get into the hall, and he has. And now he doesn't want to. He wants to live, you know, even past this. So this has given us a lot more time, and I totally appreciate it.
What's the level of his awareness to how much everybody is the outpouring of affection and just respect and everything that's happening now?
Oh, well, you know what? His brain is fine. It's just the body that deteriorates, and he's never been smarter. He can still understand everything, so I'm just thrilled that tomorrow morning is when we're going to get to present him with his busting jacket at home, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, we had heard that you had talked, or someone had volunteered, like an airplane. There was a chance that you would try to come here.
For Steve, yes. Yeah. I had an ICU jet donated and everything, but when I spoke with the president, Jim Porter, you know, we just couldn't guarantee his medically being sustained here.
Yes.
So, you know, no one was really big on him dying here.
Right.
So, and neither was he. So we regrouped, and, you know, we're going to take a private jet to him. So I think that's better. He can't even get out of bed now. You know, it's so bad. So it's just best for him, us to go to him.
And it's my understanding that you guys have a private jet. You know, Porter is with you.
Macy, our daughter.
Yeah, you've got the jacket. You'll have the bust. I'm sure there's a ton of his teammates planning on showing up, right?
Oh, yeah. Gary Finsick will be there. Bruce Herron, Jim Osborne, Jay Hilgenberg, Tommy Thayer. Yeah, all the guys, Matsui, all the guys that aren't here will be there. And I'll have the other half here.
So last night they're introducing Devin Hester and Julius Peppers. And you come out and you're on behalf of Steve. What was that like, and how much fun has this been kind of seeing what kind of impact Steve McMichael has had on so many?
You know, he's a great man, and it's not just for what he did on the football field. He's just he raised more money for charity than he ever brought home. He's just an awesome man. So the love that the 85 Bears and that whole McCaskies and the whole brotherly love, I call it the Bears brotherly love, is amazing, because they played when there was no money and they were in their 20s. They grew up together. They love each other, and they still love each other. And it's even more special now that they've had this 40-year love affair or whatever, you know. So it's just awesome. It's been so much easier to get through with them being around and showing us the love. Yeah.
You know, we had talked to Dan about the party tonight at the fairground. We parked there. And as we're leaving, there's like somebody put a thing in the door of the
car. It's a huge deal here.
I mean, it's fantastic. It's going to be like a blowout celebration. And as we've told people, you know, you've done an unbelievable job of raising money for ALS. And this is a terrifying, debilitating disease that, you know, does so much damage, relentless on a human. I think that that's part of this story as well.
It is.
The give back going on.
ALS, yes. He's brought awareness to it. I didn't know that much about it when we got diagnosed with it, you know, 7 years ago. They gave us 2 to 5 years. He's already outlived the prediction. But all I knew was Lou Gehrig's disease, and I was blindsided, so I had to get to work. And now I know way more about it than I ever wanted to, but it's going to be helpful for the next person because I want to be there to help the next girl that's blindsided with her husband's diagnosis or with her own diagnosis and doesn't know what to do or where to turn. I'm going to be there to help, you know, show them. So there was a football player named Steve Smith who played for the Raiders. His wife, Shea Smith, had taken care of him at home. And I got her number from the Gridiron Greats through Mike and Diana. Mm-hmm. And she really helped me through it so much. I don't know what I would have done without her. And I want to help. I want to be that person for the next girl.
How often does that happen where somebody comes up to you and shares their story, can relate to what you're going through and make you feel like you're not alone in something that is this profound and this difficult to deal with?
Yeah, you know what? ALS is more prevalent than you would imagine because now that I'm so aware of it and people know that what I'm dealing with, I get it all the time. People, you know, say, oh, my sister had it, my husband had it, my brother had it. Like, I hear it all the time now. So I think it is becoming more mm-hmm. aware, and I think we're already doing that by talking about it and getting it out there. So, yeah, it's more prevalent than you would imagine.
And so you go home tomorrow. You got the jacket and the bust. That's going to be a glorious moment. It's my understanding they're going to film that, and then they have Jarrett with the introduction, and they're going to tie together a whole package that they will show then on television when they're doing their that's the way you're going to do it.
That's
right?
What's up. Well, Jarrett is going to need to represent for me in the parade because I'm going to miss the parade in the morning. So he'll be here representing for me and Steve in the parade. But me and Richard Dent and Jimbo Covert and Jim McMahon and Macy, our daughter, are going to fly in and support him. And I can't wait. That's going to be the best part of this whole time.
So, Mr., before we let you go, I mean, I just marvel at how visible you have remained, how accommodating you always have been, spreading the word, talking about Steve. How do you hold it together in the way that you do?
Looks are deceiving, my love. No, I break down all the time. All the time. It just depends. Like, if somebody asks me the wrong question, I break down. Yeah, every day I break down. But I try not to in public. But
I wish I'd known that before we started talking.
It happens. You know, I'm normal. I'm a normal human.
Yeah. I tell you, you're not. You're incredibly composed, and you're doing great stuff. And, you know, anybody in Chicago that ever watched the Chicago Bears and that 85 team loves your husband. And I think this story is as gripping to people in Chicago as
just
any there is.
Yeah, the relatability.
It's unbelievable.
It's a love story. I love him. And we've been married 23 years, 26 together. And I got our only child together. I mean, I really can't ask for more, you know. I met the love of my life. I had his only child. We had many wonderful years together. So I got to take the good out of the bad.
God bless you. Thank you so much for coming on. And we're really excited for tomorrow.
Me too, baby. Thank you. Go Bears.
Thank you for being here.
That is Misty McMichael. It's beautiful. And her daughter is here with her, and it's just wonderful to see this moment. It's Mully, it's Hall, it's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Some of you guys are young, some of you guys are old. It's not too late. What you do on this field, the way you represent yourself, you leave a legacy for your grandkids, his grandkids, and your name will never be tarnished. So guys, take this opportunity that you guys are still playing. Build that foundation so one day when you're old and you're dead, your name will never die. So enjoy yourself, take the games here, and have fun, man.
We're back with Mully and Haw, live from the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We're broadcasting live from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and it's presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. And you hear there Devin Hester addressing the current Bears at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's in the building where he is going to be immortalized with a bust, and he'll have the jacket on. And
I think that was Wednesday night or maybe Thursday morning. Wednesday night. And people can hear that and appreciate the emotion with which he spoke, but I don't know that you can fully appreciate just how amazing that is to hear unless you remember just how shy and reserved Devin Hester was as a rookie in Chicago in 2006.
That's so true.
My goodness, Mully, this is the evolution of not only a Hall of Fame football player, but going from where he was as a 23-year-old or however old he was when he came into the league to now, remarkable transformation because you heard the confidence, the sincerity, and yeah, it's only a 30-second soundbite, but it is reflective of just the growth overall Devin Hester has experienced as a person.
And you know, I've got to tell you, like talking to Anthony Munoz and listening to him say how it humbles you to get this honor. That is the treatment from most of the guys here is very much in that regard. There is this feeling that they're part of this exclusive community and that they're blessed and pleased to be sort of in a fraternity of like-minded people who did the same kind of stuff. It's extraordinary. It's just an amazing feeling to be here and to watch the interaction between
It's palpable guys. Because
yes,
you see
yes.
the reaction when one sees another, and you see the common look in their eyes, and
yes.
you understand that this is the generation, and not to sound like an old guy, get off my lawn, but this is the generation that realizes and recognizes that it was a privilege and not a right to be an NFL player.
It's extraordinary.
And that's one after another. Tony Dungy before Anthony Munoz, two great examples of guys who understand just the power of their platform and also just appreciate everything that they earned. And so they are here, and we're lucky to be exposed to this because it's fun just to sit here between breaks or as we talk to see these people greet each other at a weekend that's a celebration of all the greatness they achieved.
And I got to tell you, I have heard Tony Dungy tell that story 1,000 times, and it's a well-known story about the chaplain that gave the speech about David and Goliath. And then next thing you know, Tony decides that I have got a rock and I am going to hit Goliath with it right between the eyes. And then the kickoff, and as he said, 12 seconds later, they're down a touchdown, and he's like, oh, we're never kicking it again.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Mully,
it's so classic.
You've heard it dozens of times, but have you ever heard it a minute after we talked to Devin Hester?
Well, that's and there you go.
This is behind
that's
the curtain, but we're sitting here, and we taped the Devin Hester interview yesterday when we found him, when we caught up to
yes.
him, which doesn't happen often.
No.
People don't catch Devin Hester. But we're sitting here listening to our interview unfold and finish up, and Tony Dungy walks through the lobby, and Brandon Fryer, our producer extraordinaire, like he's in a starter's position, sprints to find Tony Dungy, brings him over here. The interview ends. Tony sits down, and we're able to ask him about the guy talked to.
Tony's got the headphones on, and he hears Devin tell you that's one of his favorite returns. There's two favorite returns, and one was his.
And his reaction was great.
It was hysterical.
Yeah,
that was a beautiful moment.
It was well-timed.
You know, the other thing that's really weird is, like, we had a lot of guests on yesterday, and I really enjoyed all the conversations. And we go to the game, and there's James Lofton. And I'm like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, right.
You know,
hey, James, remember us?
He gives me a nice nod.
Yeah, hey, what's up?
And so we're sitting here, and Dan Fouts walks by. And we talked to him yesterday. And I'm like, oh, hey, Dan. Like, you're looking at me. I'm trying to wave to him.
You're waving.
He's not looking at us.
You only didn't wave once, Molly.
Oh,
you waved twice.
I thought he. Oh, Dan. He doesn't see me.
Dan.
I mean.
Come on, I'm the guy that asked you about the duck. Remember?
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
But, you know, that's the thing.
Why
is Dan Fouts in this lobby? Because he wants to run into Anthony Munoz.
That's
and why
exactly
has Anthony
right.
Munoz been here since 6:30? Because he wants to run into somebody else.
Anthony Munoz is like the man, and he's telling you. you how humble he is to be a part of this thing. That's a beautiful
moment.
Well,
the thing you mentioned, and you hit it right on it, the one commonality of all of these guys from all these different eras and generations, positions, sides of the ball, humility.
Yeah.
Humility was part of everything they accomplished, and they maintain it for the most part. Now, I'm talking about 98% of the guys. Not everybody may have that kind of quality, but you see it consistently enough that it makes an impression. By the way, Anthony Munoz, I got to talk about this. I mentioned it during the break. His pinky was grossing me out.
Oh, my God.
It was very distracting. It was parallel to the floor.
It's ridiculous.
And it was
does not look good.
In a weird, mangled way, different from the rest of his fingers.
But that's the game. I told you, I remember one of the first football games I covered. I go into the locker room, and there is Mark Bortz. And literally, he's got like three fingers heading in different directions. And there was like a needle in there. They were trying to stabilize this thing. And I was horrified. And I said to him, I said, "Oh, my God, are you okay?" And he looks up at me, and Bortzy is kind of, you know, it's almost like he just has this crazy look, you know, just the way the guy looks. He looks up at me, and he says, "Fingers don't matter in football." And I was, like, as a man that was typing for a living, you know.
You didn't correct him either. Like,
well, of course I didn't.
They do for receivers.
But but I was literally flabbergasted.
Yeah.
And it stayed in my head for years.
Well.
And I thought this
he
is
had
the
maybe
what they do.
Among the most mangled hands of any lineman you've ever seen. But I also have seen.
Probably were pre-mangled and you just hit him again, you know?
You notice it when you shake hands with some of these guys.
Yes, no question.
And then or if you're sitting across from them and interviewing them and you can't really look at him eye to eye because you can't take your eyes off his pinky.
It's
got to hurt.
I've been thinking about it, and I, honest to God, I think the next time I come into the Hall of Fame is when Hilgi gets in. Or Olin Krutz. I think Olin Krutz is a guy who belongs in this group. Just in his demeanor and nature and the kind of guy he is, he belongs in this
You
lobby.
Mean in this fraternity?
He does.
Yeah. I think a lot of
you
guys
know what
qualify
I mean? You
for
know what
that.
I mean.
Yeah, I do
just
know what you mean.
The kind of person.
Yeah, the kind of person who would enjoy
the kind of
camaraderie.
The kind of person that made the most of his career and worked his rear end off. Did Hilgi.
He'd tell you,
incredible.
I think he maxed out. You know, all these guys have maxed out.
That was one of the things Rod Marinelli said that stays with you. You know, if you coach the guy right, he when he left the game, he was done. He had drained all of it.
He knew.
He didn't walk away with more.
You don't walk away with regret.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of regret in this lobby as we watch one guy walk by after another.
It is men of great achievement who have reached a pinnacle. They know it. They recognize it in each other. And it's just, it's like, can you imagine if you're one of the 371 humans?
Yeah, you feel that humility, that sense of privilege. But in the sense of achievement, all the men walking around. We had a great conversation with a woman of strength. I mean, Misty McMichael is remarkable in all that she's able to endure, all that she's been able to keep together, all the logistics, frankly. That's a little thing, but it's a lot when you're talking about what's going on this weekend, and she has held it together, but she also was honest about the fact that she's one question away from breaking down.
Which I wish someone had said to me before because God knows I'm the guy that will step on the wrong question if it's there.
And I thought that you were going to say you are always one question away from breaking down and sobbing.
I get emotional.
Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, it is an overwhelming thing to be here and to be around these people and to see, having spent as much time in my life as I have, as you have, covering football, being around these guys and seeing, you know, sort of what it takes. And you know, it's a beautiful start to the season.
It is.
Because we're starting with this. And we see like a preseason nonsense, whatever that was. But
it was practice.
It means it's back.
It was practice on TV. The season has
begun. For yet another year of this glory.
Basically, what last night was a Bears practice narrated by Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
That's right.
And that's okay.
That's okay
because football is back. And a guy who I feel like personally, I would not be here without the sport of football. So I know I appreciate it to the degree that I do. So I love this stuff.
Right.
And last night was the beginning of another season where you just are immersed in a sport that you appreciate it's not the perfect sport. There are a lot of flaws. There are a lot of things that, you know, need addressed. You know, there are a lot of issues health-wise that you need to always be aware of. Nobody's denying or diminishing that. But let's face it, when they kicked off last night, it was like, deep breath, all right, wake me in mid-February, because every weekend from here on out is going to include a football game.
It's a wonderful thing to start the season. It's going to be even better a week from Saturday when we get to see some of the starters. It's like the real players. And I'm not asking to see a ton of it. You just want them to be ready to go. And as you pointed out, with some of the quarterbacks around the league kind of going down already, you know, health is all that matters. You've got to be ready to play. But you also don't want to have guys that won't get on the bus. You don't want guys that don't want to take part in any preseason, don't want to practice to get ready for the
season.
That's
a veiled shot at Nate Davis and not so veiled shot at Nate Davis,
maybe. I thought it was veiled
well
enough.
It was pretty veiled, yeah.
Until you said exactly what it was. I was attempting a veiled shot, but you outed me.
You know, when we come back, we never know what's going to happen next, but when we get to talking about the Bears' offensive line, maybe we can reference what exactly they would be looking at if they decided to move on without Nate Davis, keep the bus moving, as Gary Fensick alluded to yesterday, as you just reinforced, or what it will take for him to be on board, so to speak, and being part of an offensive line that is better with him than without him,
yes,
as long as he's invested.
312-644-6767. I wonder if anyone's calling. Just call and complain to Dustin. Anything in your life, whatever is annoying you, he'll be sitting there and he'll talk you out of it. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with Mully and Haw, live from the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. What a delight. We've got the MVP of the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl 20, Mr. Richard Dent, joining us now. Richard, how are you, buddy? Great to see you.
Thank you. I feel good. It's nice to be here, and it's always nice to come, you know, to a place that you can't get cut when you get on this team.
No, forever. And
this
you
is
are
a team forever.
Immortalized.
Yes, this is true, right.
Huge weekend for Bears fans in the organization. Devin Hester, Julius Peppers, Steve McMichael. What does this weekend mean to you?
Well, you know, again, I enjoy, you know, coming back and listen to guys' story. You know, what was it? What took place? You know, I say, you know, don't read to me. Talk to me. Right?
Yeah.
I know you may have to read it, but, you know, you want to hear it from the heart. And, you know, that's what you enjoy, just to sit and listen to guys, what they had to go through, what they had to do. We know what you went through, you know.
Yes.
But yet hearing it.
Yes.
And talking about it, how it took place, that's what you enjoy. That's what I enjoy outside of, you know, it's a place where your hero may be in there. You know, and my hero was in there, and he was Claude Humphrey. You know, so it was you know, it's just amazing, you know. And I was 12, 13 years old, and I called Claude Humphrey at Atlanta Falcons, you know, and I'm living in Atlanta, and I called him, and he get on the phone, and I just locked up. I couldn't talk to him or anything. Then I had a chance back to go to Tennessee State and break his records and whatever. You know, faith in God is with you once you decide your faith and what you're looking for. And what I mean, I watched him as a kid. I watched him, Tommy Nobis. You know, to me, I enjoyed his game as of how he played aggressive, you know, and just dictated on certain parts of the field. So, to me, I enjoyed him, and I enjoyed Muhammad Ali as of calling things out. So, as a young man, you put those two things in your game, and this is what you come out with.
And your story is as extraordinary as anyone's, given when you were drafted.
Yeah.
It was almost like this perfect marriage of this innovative defense where you're with Buddy and you're doing something different, and your skill set was unbelievable. The legend has it that it was nutrition. Eating well enough. You had a
bad
problem
with
your teeth.
Bad dental issues.
Yes.
And still, you know, Tennessee State Yeah, we ran all the time. So we weren't going to put no weight on you. I mean, we practiced twice a day on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, okay, in college.
Twice a day.
So, you know, it, as we used to say, you know, it's hard to be a Tiger. But at Tennessee State, I say this to young men and young women and folks that you need to be pushed to a level that you don't know that you have.
Yeah.
And once you push to that level, then you know where to go and what to do, right? But you need to find somebody that can touch you in a way. The guy was Joe Gillum for me.
Oh, really?
Okay? Mm-hmm. And that was his son that played for the Steelers. And Joe was, you know, I came to Tennessee State as offensive lineman and tight end, and I knew I wasn't going anywhere. So, you know, I mean, I went there with three other my buddies, and the coach looking, Gillum looked at me and said, "Hey, coach, we didn't ask for this guy." You know? And my high school coach put his hand around his shoulder and said, "Good luck, coach," and walked away. So it was to me, I'm like, damn, these folks don't even want me. I'm sitting here, then, you know, and they're the offense. I'm like, they don't know. I'm like, so the only way to me to make people find out who you are and what you are, you can't talk about it. You got to be about it.
Yeah.
And I got on, you know, offense, but yet I got on the Diamond Squad defense, and I started learning because the guys that I came there with was defensive ball players. So
wow, that's
I watched the defense. Yeah. I watched the defense practice and techniques and stuff, and I started implementing that in my practice with the offense on the Diamond Squad.
Wow.
So
it's incredible.
I shaped myself to one, create hell over there on offense. And they kept me over there the whole season, and they kept me over there the whole spring. And after the spring, they said, okay, you can go to defense.
Good move.
And that's when everything took
And so you have that career, but you're drafted in the eighth round. They don't even have eight rounds anymore,
yeah,
Richard.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's almost like you were the equivalent of an undrafted free agent that ends up here in the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, again, you know, that situation, when you get drafted, is to me you're getting more money than you have in your pocket.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I hear kids tell me, oh, I lost money. How did you lose money? Hell, you didn't have it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe your draft move, but either way it goes, it's money that you didn't have. And when you get that money, now you got to prove that you're worth that money.
Right.
Or you got to prove I'm worth more.
Yeah.
So the end of the day is give me an opportunity. Once I get that opportunity, then it's in your hands. You know, not many people get opportunities. When you get opportunities, hey, I mean, you know, it's they say it's, oh, 300 million people have played this game. But it's only 370-something guys.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So, it's, you know, the odds are, you know, is it better hitting the lottery? Is it better
so
hitting
true.
Your dream? You know, this is a dream that,
do you,
you
feel,
know,
I mean, like, obviously – you look at you, Richard. You're a big, strong man who is faster than other guys. You, the skill set is what got you. Your push, your drive,
right.
What you
That's what
made
you
yourself.
Have to have.
You got to have that. But you're saying, and I find this fascinating, you feel like you're a lotto winner because you're with this group. And like you beat the odds. And you did. You did beat the odds. But, I mean, you also did it because of who you are and what you can do and how you pushed yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was about, I mean, I had seven brothers, you know.
And, wow.
You know, I'm six out of nine, and I'm the biggest one in the family. So, you know, the hand-me-down didn't work for me. The shoes didn't fit. The shirts didn't fit. The underwears, nothing fit, you know. So, you know, it was me. I mean, I was a young entrepreneur. I didn't play but 2 years football in high school. Yeah, you know, so my ninth grade and 10th grade year, I mean, I was working already in the 7th and 8th grade.
Wow.
So I had worked every fast food chain known before I got to high school.
That's
you know, I kind of lied about my age because I was a big kid. But yet, it was all about going to work because I knew my family couldn't afford, you know, to support me when I got three brothers in front of me. I got four brothers in front of me. And I got three behind me.
Wow.
So,
unbelievable.
So it's in the middle. There. It was like, you know, I mean, my dad thought he had the next Jackson 5. I mean, we used to entertain. You know, we had a band. We used to have talent shows in our backyard, charge a quarter to get in. You know, so to me, I was already there, but yet I was shy and afraid to pursue what I'm what I have done.
Sure, sure.
You know? So when you're shy and you're afraid of that, you know, you stick to something else. And one of my buddies just kept pushing me and to guide me in there, and I finally got there.
So you knew Steve McMichael in a way that we obviously didn't. As a teammate, what was he like, and how much easier did he make your job if he had the effect on it at all?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, you was talking about Buddy's system.
Sure.
You know, Buddy didn't play guys that wasn't smart or couldn't be smart.
Yeah.
Because Buddy, we coach on the field, but when we hit the field, and this is where I like coaches, you know, this is where coaches kind of look at themselves to be great or whatever. You know, you're as great as the guys that can go out there and work for you. And Buddy used to give us the game. What do you mean, give us the game? On first down, first and second down, we call what we see, not what he wants. Right?
That's great. And yeah, that's great.
So people talk about Auburn, and they talk about Peyton Manning and do all this stuff. Well, hell, I mean, that's what we did on defense.
Yes.
If you jumped in an I formation, we jumped in an under.
Yes.
If you jumped in a red formation, you know, we may jump in an over or swim or whatever it may be. If you motion a guy out, shit, we may have a blitz. So things, shit, will change as the offense changes. And in doubt, a guy like Steve and Fridge, the guys who played in the middle, what's going on, bro?
Marcus Allen enters
Allen.
The chat.
Marcus Allen.
Do you have a jacket?
No. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So Marcus Allen can block Richard Dent.
It's a joy. It's a thrill. God bless you.
I wish we had time enough to tell the story of how we became lovers and friends. It was something else. Go ahead.
The most violent game in NFL history, the Raiders and the Bears game in 1984 after
the Right.
Telling the story about the 1984 Bears-Raiders game.
Affirmation. We became good friends because I didn't back down. He was ill. I mean, and we became friends.
Yeah. Marcus Allen, everybody.
And we became friends during the game. Okay, let me start all over. Okay.
So you're in the most violent game ever played.
Yeah, it was coined the most violent game in NFL history, yes.
I remember that.
Yes. And Richard was... I mean, he was coming off the ball, and I think, I don't know if it was early first quarter or something. I may be exaggerating just a little bit, but he already had like 3 sacks. So I had to really stop what I was doing. You know, normally I'd be in a pass route or something like that and or play action and doing something, but I had to stop and help out on Richard every single time. And the first time I hit him, he'll say this, I hit him right in the face mask. And then he's like, oh, okay. And then I hit him again in the face mask. And he says, oh, looked at me, all right, with, you know, some admiration. And then what he was anticipating, the third time I was going to cut him. And I didn't. I hit him again in the face mask. So he walked into our huddle, and he said, you guys need to be more like this guy. And so that's how we became friends. It was in the heat of battle.
Oh, my God.
And he was bringing
it. That's awesome.
He was relentless. I mean, he built residence in our backfield, right? And I was relegated to helping out most of the game because he was coming off the ball so quickly.
Hall of Fame running back has to chip on Richard.
How about that? Yeah. Those are the days.
And so, you know, admiration, and also his middle name's Lamar, mine is Lamar and stuff. We go like, obviously we got some connection here.
That's so awesome.
We became friends, and we've
been
friends ever since. So.
Marcus, indulge us for a moment. Richard, appreciate your patience.
Yeah.
I imagine that as a former USC star who has won a Heisman Trophy, you have thoughts on another guy who is former USC star who has won a Heisman Trophy. Caleb Williams, what should the Bears expect?
Well, I hope and expect him to play well. I think not only does he have high football IQ, obviously we know he's physically gifted. He can run, he could, you know, and he can throw from a variety of angles. But I think he's a winner. That's what I see in him. Obviously, the quarterback position obviously takes a little time to develop. You get a lot more thrown at you than most. I think a lot of times in college, you know, and then we have to sort of temper expectations. when, and I think, again, his IQ is high enough, but in college they do things differently. Most of the, you know, the adjustments are made from the sideline, right? You know, quarterbacks, and they look to the quote to the coach to change plays. But I think he had the ability to do that then, and I think he did it quite a bit. So that gives me, obviously, there's no pause whatsoever, and I think he'll be great, you know. And I think the thing that we have to, you know, that I know is if he gets off to a rough start, I think he'll endure it. Because I think he's mentally strong, too. So that's one of the big things.
Marcus Allen, Richard Dent, thank you for being here, guys.
Thank you. Hey, Richard. Hey, listen here, man. I love Richard Dent, guys. Let me tell you. He should run for mayor. But and I'd be his campaign manager to make sure he loses. Because you don't need to be in politics, Richard.
We'll talk about Richard Dent's mayoral campaign next. We come back. It's Mullion Haugh from Canton, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with Mullion Haugh, live from the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. On 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app.
Mullion Haugh, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. What a delight. We've got the MVP of the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl 20, Mr. Yeah. Richard Dent joining us now. Richard, how are you, buddy? Great to see you. Look
thank
great
you,
for yourself.
Thank you. I feel good. It's nice to be here, and it's always nice to come, you know. Come to a place that you can't get cut when you get on this team.
No, forever. And
this
you
is
are
a team forever.
Immortalized.
Yes, true, right.
Huge weekend for Bears fans in the organization. Devin Hester, Julius Peppers, Steve McMichael. What does this weekend mean to you?
Well, you know, again, I enjoy, you know, coming back and listening to guys' story. You know, what was it? What took place, you know, I say, you know, don't read to me, talk to me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I know you may have to read it, but, you know, you want to hear it from the heart. And, you know, that's what you enjoy, just to sit and listen to guys, what they had to go through, what they had to do. We know what you went through, you know.
Yes.
Yet hearing it.
Yes.
And talking about it, how it took place, that's what you enjoy. That's what I enjoy outside of, it's a place where your hero may be in there. You know, my hero was in there, and he was Claude Humphrey. You know, so it's just amazing. You know, and I was 12, 13 years old, and I called Claude Humphrey at Atlanta Falcons. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm living in Atlanta, and I called him, and he get on the phone, and I just locked up. I couldn't talk to him or anything. Then I had a chance back to go to Tennessee State and break his records and whatever. You know, faith in God is with you once you decide your faith and what you're looking for. And what I mean, I watched him as a kid. I watched him, Tommy Nobis. You know, to me, I enjoyed his game as of how he played aggressive, you know, and just dictated on certain sure. parts of the field. So, to me, I enjoyed him, and I enjoyed Muhammad Ali as of calling things out. So, as a young man, you put those two things in your game, and this is what you come out with.
And your story is as extraordinary as anyone's, given when you were drafted.
Yeah.
What, you know, it was almost like this perfect marriage of this innovative defense where you're with Buddy and you're doing mm-hmm. something different, and your skill set was mm-hmm. unbelievable. The legend has it that it was nutrition. You weren't eating well enough. You had a
bad dental issues.
Yes.
And still, you know, Tennessee State, hell, we ran all the time. So
yes.
we weren't going to put no weight on you. I mean, we practiced twice a day on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Okay, in
twice
college.
A day.
So, you know, it as we used to say, you know, it's hard to be a tiger. But at Tennessee State, I say this to young men and young women and folks, that you need to be pushed to a level that you don't know that you have.
Yeah.
And once you push to that level, then you know where to go and what to do. Right. But you need to find somebody that can touch you in a way. The guy was Joe Gillum for me.
Oh, really?
Okay? Mm-hmm. And that was his son that played for the Steelers. And Joe was, you know, I came to Tennessee State as offensive lineman and tight end. And I knew I wasn't going anywhere. So, you know, I mean, I went there with three other my buddies, and And the coach looked, and Gillum looked at me and said, "Hey, coach, we didn't ask for this guy." And my coach, my high school coach, put his hand around his shoulder and said, "Good luck, coach," and walked away. So it was to me, I'm like, damn, these folks don't even want me. I'm sitting here, then, you know, and it did the offense. I'm like, they don't know. I'm like, so the only way to me to make people find out who you are and what you are, you can't talk about it. You got to be about it.
Yeah.
And I got on, you know, offense, but yet I got on the Diamond Squad defense, and I started learning because the guys that I came there with was defensive ball players. So
wow, that's
I watched the defense. Yeah. I watched the defense practice and techniques and stuff, and I started implementing that in my practice with the offense on the dummy squad.
Wow.
So
it's incredible.
I shaped myself to one, create hell over there on offense, and they kept me over there the whole season, and they kept me over there the whole spring. And after the spring, they said, okay, you can go to defense.
Good move.
And that's when everything took
place. And so you have that career. But you're drafted in the eighth round. They don't even have eight rounds anymore, Richard.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's almost like you were the equivalent of an undrafted free agent that ends up here in the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, again, you know that situation, when you get drafted, to me, is you're getting more money than you have in your pocket.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I hear kids tell me, oh, I lost money. How did you lose money? Hell, you didn't have it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe your draft move, but either way it goes, it's money that you didn't have. And when you get that money, now you got to prove that you're worth that money.
Right.
Or you got to prove I'm worth more.
Yeah.
So the end of the day is give me an opportunity. Once I get that opportunity, then it's in your hands. You know, not many people get opportunities. When you get opportunities, hey, I mean, you know, it's they say it's, oh, 300 million people have played this game. But it's only 370-something guys.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So it's, you know, the odds are, you know, is it better hitting the lottery? Is it better
so
hitting
true.
Your dream? You know, this is a dream that,
do you feel,
know,
I mean, like, obviously, you look at you, Richard. You're a big, strong man who is faster than other guys. You, the skill set is what got you. Your push, your drive,
right.
What you
That's what
made
you have
yourself.
To have.
You got to have that. But you're saying, and I find this fascinating. You feel like you're a lotto winner because you're with this group, and like you beat the odds, and you did. You did beat the odds. But I mean, you also did it because of who you are and what you can do and how you pushed yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was about, I mean, I had seven brothers, you know. And,
wow. Wow.
You know, I'm six out of nine, and I'm the biggest one in the family. So, you know, the hand-me-down didn't work for me. The shoes didn't fit. The shirts didn't fit. The underwears, nothing fit, you know. So, you know, it was me. I mean, I was a young entrepreneur. I didn't play but 2 years football in high school. Yeah, you know, so my ninth grade and tenth grade year, I mean, I was working already in the seventh and eighth grade.
Wow.
So I had worked every fast food chain known before I got to high school.
That's
you
right.
know, I kind of lied about my age because I was a big kid. But yet, it was all about going to work because I knew my family couldn't afford, you know, to support me when I got three brothers in front of me. I got four brothers in front of me. And I got three behind me.
Wow.
So,
unbelievable.
So it's in the middle there. It's like, you know, I mean, my dad thought he had the next Jackson 5. I mean, we used to entertain. You know, we had a band. We used to have talent shows in our backyard, charge a quarter to get in. You know, so to me, I was already there, but yet I was shy and afraid to pursue what I have done.
Sure,
today.
Sure.
You know? So when you're shy and you're afraid of that, you know, you stick to something else. And one of my buddies just kept pushing me and to guide me in there, and I finally got there.
So you knew Steve McMichael in a way that we obviously didn't. As a teammate, what was he like, and how much easier did he make your job if he had the effect on it at all?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, you was talking about Buddy's system.
Sure.
You know, Buddy didn't play guys that wasn't smart or couldn't be smart.
Yeah.
Because Buddy, we coach on the field, but when we hit the field, and this is where I like coaches, you know, this is where coaches kind of look at themselves to be great or whatever. You know, you're as great as the guys that can go out there and work for you. And Buddy used to give us the game. What do you mean, give us the game? On first down, first and second down, we call what we see. not what he wants. Right?
That's great. Yeah, so, it's great.
So people talking about Auburn, and they talk about Peyton Manning and do all this stuff. Well, hell, I mean, that's what we did on defense.
Yes.
If you jumped in an I formation, we jumped in an under.
Yes.
If you jumped in a red formation, you know, we may jump in an over or swim or whatever it may be. If you motion a guy out, shit, we may have a blitz. So things, shit will change as the offense changes. And in doubt, a guy like Steve and Fridge, the guys who played in the middle, what's going on, bro?
Marcus Allen enters the chat.
Marcus Allen. Yeah.
Do you have a jacket?
No. Sure.
So Marcus Allen can block Richard Dent.
It's a joy. It's a thrill. God bless you.
I wish we had time enough to tell the story of how we became lovers and friends. It was something else. You go ahead.
The most violent game in NFL history, the Raiders and the Bears game in 1984 after the
Right.
The story about the 1984 Bears Raiders game.
Admiration. We became good friends because I didn't back down. He was ill. I mean, it was, and we became friends.
Yeah. Marcus Allen, everybody.
And we became friends during the game. Okay, let me start all over. Okay.
So you're in the most violent game ever played.
Yeah, it was coined the most violent game in NFL history.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yes. And Richard was. I mean, he was coming off the ball, and I think, I don't know if it was early first quarter or something. I may be exaggerating just a little bit, but he already had like three sacks. So I had to really stop what I was doing. You know, normally I'd be in a pass route or something like that and or play action and doing something. But I had to stop and help out on Richard every single time. And the first time I hit him, he'll say this, I hit him right in the face mask. And then he's like, oh, okay. And then I hit him again in the face mask. And he says, oh, looked at me, all right, with you know, some admiration. And then what he was anticipating, the third time I was going to cut him. And I didn't. I hit him again in the face mask. So he walked into our huddle, and he said, you guys need to be more like this guy. And so that's how we became friends. It was in the heat of battle.
Oh, my God.
And he was
that's
bringing
awesome.
It. He was relentless. I mean, he built residence in our backfield, right? And I was relegated to helping out most of the game because he was coming off the ball so quickly.
Hall of Fame running back has to chip on Richard.
How about that? Yeah. And those are the days.
And so, you know, admiration and also his middle name is Lamar, mine is Lamar and stuff. We go like, obviously we got some connection here.
That's so awesome.
We became friends and we've
That's
been
awesome.
Friends ever since. So.
Marcus, indulge us for a moment. Richard, appreciate your patience.
Yeah.
I imagine that as a former USC star who has won a Heisman Trophy, you have thoughts on another guy who is former USC star who has won a Heisman Trophy. Caleb Williams, what should the Bears expect?
Well, I hope and expect him to play well. I think not only does he have high football IQ, obviously we know he's physically gifted. He can run, he can throw from a variety of angles, but I think he's a winner. That's what I see in him. Obviously, the quarterback position obviously takes a little time to develop. You get a lot more thrown at you than most. I think a lot of times in college, you know, and then we have to sort of temper expectations and I think, again, his IQ is high enough, but in college they do things differently. Most of the, you know, the adjustments are made from the sideline, right? You know, quarterbacks and they look to the quote, to the coach to change plays, but I think he had the ability to do that then, and I think he did it quite a bit. So that gives me, obviously, there's no pause whatsoever, and I think I think he'll be great, you know. I think the thing that we have to, you know, that I know is if he gets off to a rough start, I think he'll endure it because I think he's mentally strong too. So that's one of the big things.
Marcus Allen, Richard Dent, thank you for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Hey,
thank
Richard.
You,
hey, listen here, man. I love Richard Dent, guys. Let me tell you, he should run for mayor, but and I'd be his campaign manager to make sure he loses because you don't need to be in politics, Richard.
We'll talk about Richard Dent's mayoral campaign next. We come back. It's Mullenhaw from Cannon, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.